Heart of the Matter is brought to you by Dundalk Christian Counselling Centre. This free counselling service is situated at Dundalk Baptist Centre on RT Terrace. You can contact us in complete confidence on 932 7094 or email us at christiancounselling@aircom.net. You can also visit our website at dundalkbaptistchurch.org/counselling.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Heart of the Matter on Dundalk FM, your community, your radio. In studio I have Michael and Maddie. How are you doing, Michael?
Not too bad, Kevin, thanks.
And Stephen is away out west in Westport. He's having a few days away, so we hope he's enjoying his time away. So, Michael, you've stepped into the breach tonight and we're looking at the book of James, isn't that right?
Yeah, we obviously don't have all the time to look at everything that we could in as far as the theology of James. But we're just going to take a few topics from this important book and kind of see what the author has to say about a few different subjects.
So if you're looking for the book of James, it's towards the end of the Bible, and you'll find it somewhere between 3 John and Revelation. But we start with a piece of music, and this is Selah with How Great Thou Art.
Oh Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands hath made, I see the stars. Then sings my soul.
Well, we're going to look at a few important topics that James covers in his letter. And the first thing that he starts off with is this whole concept of suffering and testing that believers undergo. He starts with the famous words, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet various trials." Why? "For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness." So it makes you a strong person to undergo trials, he's saying. God, in his wisdom, allows us to undergo suffering and trials for our good, for our growth, for our maturation. Right now, in this life, we are being sanctified. We are being made more and more like Jesus. But there will be a time when all of this comes together and there will be this perfection. We will be like Jesus, which is what John says in 1 John 3:2. He says that when he appears, as when Jesus appears, we shall be like him because we shall see him as it is. But right now we have to go through sufferings and trials. And James is telling his readers to count it all joy, to count it joy because you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. I think verse 5 develops and continues what he has just been saying as well. Verse 5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him." There are some who think that James is more of a compilation of disconnected proverb-like sayings. I don't think that's the case at all. I think there is continuity and connection. And so when we come to verse 5, I don't think that this is a general statement on wisdom, but rather it is connected to what came before. So as you are experiencing trials, as you are experiencing suffering, in those times we often need wisdom. It is possible that underlying this statement is that those to whom James is writing, they were starting to wonder about God's goodness as they are experiencing trials in their lives. And so James reminds them to ask God for wisdom because he generously gives it without reproach. But then he says, let him ask in faith. Well, faith in what? Seemingly in the goodness of God, that these trials are not from an angry or detached God, but one who has brought these about for your good and his glory. But then he says, but let him ask in faith with no doubting. That is, without doubting God's goodness. For the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. Tom Schreiner helpfully remarks about this passage. He says, quote, "Sometimes I think this passage is used kind of like a club over people's heads, and they feel really bad when they read it. But actually, I think to read it very positively. It's an invitation to trust God's goodness for us in difficulties. And if you're not trusting in Him, you can't receive anything from Him. But believe that He's good and His intentions for you are good, even in suffering, and you'll have wisdom and perspective on what's happening." Then if we jump down to verse 12, we see the same theme picked up again. Dr. Schreiner calls this a double introduction. Well, why does he do that? Well, we began with, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds." And then in verse 12, we read, quote, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trials." And so we're back to sufferings. We're back to trials. He goes on to say, "For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him." I agree with those commentators who understand the phrase "of life" there to be appositional to the crown. That means that the crown is life. It is eternal life. So one of the themes that James hits on and right from the beginning is this idea of suffering and testing and how we should count them as joy, knowing that God is not against us, He is not angry with us, but that He is bringing about these trials not only for our good, but for His glory, so that we might be sanctified, we might be perfected, we might become more mature and ever made more like Christ. Well, there's many more topics we can look at. We'll look at another one here on what James has to say about wealth and riches and poverty. But before we do that, we're going to go to our second song, which is a song by Hillsong, and it's called "Worthy is the Lamb."
Thank you for the cross, Lord. Thank you for the price you paid, bearing all my sin and shame. In love you gave amazing grace. Thank you for this love. Me in your cleansing flood. Now all I know, your forgiveness and embrace. Worthy is the Lamb, seated on the cross. Crown you now with
and
James also has lots to say regarding poverty and wealth and riches. In verses 9 to 11, we have this reversal of fortunes. We read, "Let the lowly brother boast in his exaltation, and the rich in his humiliation, because like a flower of the grass he will pass away. For the sun rises with its scorching heat and withers the grass, its flower falls and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of his pursuits." What is the echo that would reverberate in the Jewish Christian's ear who heard this? Well, it would be Isaiah 40, 7 to 8. There, Isaiah speaks of the temporality of the grass and flowers. But what is it that's eternal? What will stand forever? Well, it's the Word of God. James is drawing on this context. And so what's the point? The point is, we must learn to trust God and His Word than to get sucked into the snares of this world. The pursuit of wealth is a snare. The temptation to get rich by unethical means is always there. The rich man will die and be left with nothing, even while he is in pursuit of his riches. James seems to be aware of much of Jesus' teaching throughout this book, and so it is possible that James is also drawing from Jesus' parable about the rich man and Lazarus. So even though a brother is poor, he will be exalted. Even though the rich man is exalted now, he will be brought low. In all of this, James is teaching his readers to think in an otherworldly way. He's teaching them that because of what Jesus has done for us and in us, we need to think about things in an upside-down, inside-out way. We need to see how things really are and not how things temporally are. Trials hurt, we suffer. He says, count it joy. The brother is poor, he is lowly, he's got very little, he'll be exalted. The rich man has much, he's got it all, but he's ultimately humiliated. James doesn't have a lot of nice things to say about the rich. In 2:5 and following, he says that the rich are oppressors. They bring legal charges against them. They blaspheme. He says, do not be concerned with the pursuit of money, is what he tells them. Well, why? Because, quote, God has chosen those who are poor in the world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom. So don't desire to be rich and store up money for yourself, because all of that will fade. You have something better than temporary wealth. You get an eternal kingdom, is what James is telling his readers. You are heirs of the kingdom, so live in light of this. Well, how do we do that? Well, then you look to chapter 1, verse 27, right? Visit orphans and widows, take care of those who need food and clothing. But in both of these things, he is encouraging his readers to think in this upside down, inside out way that only exists now because of what Jesus has done for us and in us.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it, Michael? Like, this whole idea is completely counterintuitive. It goes very much against how the world is structured. It's against the grain in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah,
and it's calling Christians to live. But not just to live, but to think very differently.
Yeah, and that's a good point. That's a very good point, because it's not just, hey, do this, but because you should, but your minds have to be reoriented into the reality of God's kingdom. And God's kingdom come in Jesus is so counter, not just countercultural, which it is, but counterintuitive, as you said, because we see, oh, well, those who have money, they are the ones with power. But in the kingdom of Christ, he's the one with the power. Mm-hmm. All authority in heaven and earth have been given to him, and he is the one who is washing his disciples' feet. And so there's this relationship between servants are the ones who are the most important. The first will be last and last first.
Yeah, and I think that's what came to mind as you were discussing the idea of rich and poor. It is the way the world should be, because of the fact that if people are getting rich on the backs of others' sufferings, then it is only right that the tables should be turned. That, you know, if they're getting rich by unethical means, then let's face it, that's most of the time that's what happens. Somebody said every big business started with a crime, so you know, it's not unusual for that to happen. But if that's the case, then all the riches in the world is not going to secure your eternal salvation.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the way that life is to work in light of Christ and his coming and his kingdom is really summed up well by Paul in Philippians 2. He says, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others." I mean, that's really what James is fleshing out in these various examples here.
Yeah, it's a very practical book, isn't it? It's not as like you've the theological books like Romans and others, but James just hits the nail on the head every time and tries as in the language he uses to be as direct and practical as possible.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about James right after the ad break.